if you're investing the dollars that you invest today, inflation is your number one friend. Now, I'm not saying inflation is not going to come down. I'm in the camp of people that believe that inflation will come down to somewhere between 2 and 3%. Technically, at this point, it's below 3% for one measure and slightly above 3% for the other measure. So there's two ways of measuring inflation. And so if you average them out, you're at 3%. And I believe that it's not going to come down to 2%, but it's going to stay between 2 and 3% for the next, 5 or 10 years. There might be spikes. Who knows? Can't predict the future.
Are you ready to transform your life? This is a no-nonsense show helping immigrants like you create generational wealth, even while working full-time. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Saket Jain.
Welcome back, my Great to Wealth listeners. Today, I have very few repeat guests on this show. Very few repeat guests. Neil's one of my favorite guys who I listen to a lot. So I'm like, you know what? Whenever I have the opportunity to bring Neil here, his insights, he's called that's with love, mad scientist of the family because he has a data science background. Again, we won't go into the details of his background. If you want to hear Neil's story, look back to our previous episodes, you'll find Neil's show. So you can get a lot of his story in there. But what I want to do is I want to maximize Neil's time here because I know he's a busy guy. Basically go to right into, which we don't do in our show, but this one is going to be a very technical, very deep dive, very focused on what's happening in the market, macro, micro, whatever level we end up conversing on. So Neil, with that, let's jump into it. I know the markets.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those are listeners who don't know much about you. Give a very short introduction of what you're doing right now, what your focus is, so people have the right context.
Sure. We're data science scientists that are applying data science to large commercial real estate portfolio of almost $1 billion with 4,800 units, about $300 million in investor equity is being managed. And our focus is to navigate and also benefit from the market conditions. There's a lot more benefiting this year and a lot more navigating last year because we had to refinance our properties and, go through pref equity raises and things like that to basically also, we were very aggressively operating our properties last year, applying for tax incentive rebates and things like that to, stabilize our properties. So a lot of that is done. I'd say 80% of that is done. And now we're just sort of looking forward to the opportunities in the marketplace. So I am extremely bullish on the opportunities in the marketplace, but I'm extremely angry, or you can use the word mad. I'm the mad scientist after all, with the syndication community and the equity raiser community, because this community is making the opposite of the mistake that they made in 2021 and 2022. Back then, people were too bullish. I would routinely hear on podcasts things like multifamily can never really go down because of inflation and blah, blah, blah. Sort of there was a lot of nonsense back then. And so that was a mistake, clearly, to say that multifamily can't go down or if there's something magical about this asset class. Look, it's an asset class. It's privileged, but it's not magical. And that means that it suffers with the market. And one of the key things that we've learned, including myself, is that there is a very straight line relationship, very tight relationship between interest rates and cap rates. Interest rates go up, cap rates go up, interest rates go down, cap rates go down. And so that relationship has now been proven to everybody. So everyone's learned a lot of very useful things. But today, they have been so beaten down by what has happened in the last 18 months, the lack of any cash flow, nobody's cash flowing, nobody's distributing, the cash calls, the pref equity, the, properties going back to the bank. All of these are realities. All of these are things that have happened, though to a much lesser extent than anyone had predicted, including me, but they've happened. And that has beaten down investors. It's beaten down equity raisers. It's beaten down syndicators and operators. And they are not pointing out the opportunities in the marketplace to their investors and to their community. That's what I'm mad about. When 2.5 years ago, I was saying this market is too expensive, don't buy anything. I really don't think many people listened to me. Yeah. But, and maybe some did, and maybe some good was done there. Today, I'm saying, I think you should be buying practically everything in the marketplace that has an assumption on it. So there's a very specific caveat to what I'm saying. You buy everything in the marketplace that has an assumption on it, a reasonable assumption on it. And I'm still finding people are like, no, I'm going to wait for Q2, Q3, Q4, Q whatever, and because investors are afraid. And my biggest feedback is investors are afraid because of what happened in the last 2 years. They're not looking at today's market. They're not looking at today's opportunities. They're just looking at what their experience over the last 18 to 24 months. And they're making a huge mistake, the same sort of mistake that they made in 2008, 2009. And it is the job of the syndication industry and the equity raiser industry to say the truth without exaggeration on the opportunities that exist today. And so my message, and I recently delivered this actually last week on Thursday at one of the biggest conferences in the industry. So it's a equity raiser conference called Raise Fest. So Hunter Thompson runs this conference. Yeah. He's a friend of mine. And I stood up on stage in front of, there were 1,000 seats that had been sold. There were about 700 people in attendance. And I stood up on stage and I told people, I'm really mad at you because you were too beaten down. You are so frustrated and kind of demotivated because of all of the cash calls and all of the explanations of cash flow, all the bad news that you've delivered to investors, that you were seemingly have become incapable of delivering the good news. And so in many different ways in that presentation, I tried to enable them to deliver the actual good news that we have in the industry today.
Neil, love it. I missed it. I was about to be there, but I was the 300 of those people that were missing from the room was one of them was me. Anyways, I think I believe in that, right? I believe in that every asset class, as an asset class, everything goes up and down, right? Yep. Nothing is always going to go up. Nothing is always going to go down. So there's a timing of that. I think the challenge that I see right now that there are equity raisers who are good at it, and there's equity raisers who got in because it was easy. It's equity. So I think your messaging is probably the guys or gals who were there because they were just good raisers in general, because they knew the market, they've done their own study, their own thesis. I don't think they have slowed down. I think they are still believing in it. I think the folks who entered because equity raising was easy, because when the pizza delivery guy is talking about multifamily being the right asset, it doesn't take much time to convince people that multifamily is the right asset. But I always believe that now it's a time where I think it's in a way, and I would love to hear your perspective because you're much deeper into it than I am. I think a lot of that is it's cleaning up the environment also for the equity raisers who were in it for the ease of it versus for the right reasons, because they want to help the investors, right? For those guys and gals who are left now, they truly want to be equity raisers. It's not an easy business. It's a lot of work.
Being raising equity, partnering with other people primarily for an equity reason. Obviously, they're doing other activities as well, and that's very important to state. But it's so the cleanup is wonderful. It's a natural part of the down cycle, right? So I always say to people, recessions of any kind, whether it's a real estate recession or an economy recession, are really good. They're awesome. They're fantastic. Not having recessions is a very bad thing, because you don't ever have cleanup, right? So what happens during boom markets is companies, individuals that are not as talented, not as skilled, not as good, proliferate. There's a lot of them. There's too many of them. Right. And what happens during a down market is that they get cleaned up, or they get, mergers, acquisitions, just, companies going out of business, whatever it might be. And the strong survive, and then the strong then thrive for the next cycle, which is to the benefit of the investors, because they want to give their money to people that are strong enough to thrive, survive, and figure out ways around problems, right? So that's happening. That's great news. But I think that even, I don't agree with you, Saket, that the people that are strong equity raisers are raising. They are raising money, but what I'm finding is that they're raising a fraction of what they were raising before. The number that I've heard a lot at RaiseFest last week was, we're raising 1/4 to 1/3 of what we were raising before. That was a common number. Mm. Doesn't apply to everybody, but I think it may be an average. And I think the biggest part of that process, and I can pretty much guarantee this because I'm on the email drip campaign of a number of equity raisers, just so that I learn what it is that they're doing. Yeah. What they're raising money for. Are they raising money for, multifamily, ATM, self-storage, mobile home parks? What is getting traction? You also learn from there the way that they pitch things. Isn't and you it? Say, hey, this is very interesting. I missed this aspect of it. So I'm on the email drip of a large number of these equity raisers. I haven't worked with equity raisers for a while, but they're a key part of this industry at this point. And I think that for the industry to recover, with 2024 being a recovery year and 2025 being, the start of a new cycle, we need these people. to do their job. Yeah. And I'm not just talking about equity raisers. I'm talking about the syndicators, the operators. I am not seeing them tell the truth to their investors. I am not seeing them be aggressive enough and tell their investors about what they really should, what investors really need to be looking at, what investors. And also, I don't see anyone answering these highly irrational questions that investors are now asking. I see, you know, investors asking loads of extremely irrational questions. And I'm going to give you one example, Saket, and I think this will immediately click the moment I do this. So what I did was I went to my own team, my investor relations team, and I said, you have 2 weeks to come up with a list of all of the irrational questions or maybe rational questions that investors are telling you to back away. Obviously, there's a bunch of rational questions. Try and put those aside. Focus only on the ones that you think are irrational. They gave me about 70 questions and I came up with the top 10, right? And then I wrote answers on them because they're ridiculously irrational. But I'm finding that even people that have been in this industry for 5 years don't know the answer to these simple questions. Okay, so, and here's an example. This one I used actually on stage at RaiseFest. So here we go. Here's the question. The investor says, Saket, I can earn 5% in a money market account right now. Why should I invest in real estate?
Oh my God.
So this is number one.
Right? Yeah.
Correct. Right? My answer is, and sir, that 5% is going away. The Fed will probably cut 3 to 4 times this year. And so you'll be making 4% by the end of this year. And then you'll be making 3% by the end of next year. And with inflation at 3% during that time, you're effectively making nothing in both of those years. 4 minus 1, you made 1%. 3 minus 3, you made 0. So over the next 2 years, you will make a 1% return in 2 years on your money. Plus, you're going to lose all of the depreciation benefits to write off existing income. And then on that 1% in 2 years, you will pay ordinary income taxes instead of capital gains. How is this a good move?
And we haven't even talked about the potential appreciation that
we haven't talked about that because you know what? I'm just trying to answer this one question because I have 10 of them, right?
Yeah.
The point is this. Forget about all of those other things. How is what you're doing rational? Forget about what we are doing. Forget about multifamily. How could what investing in money markets accounts with, you know, inflation at 3%, I'm making 5%, but by the end of this year, you'll be making 4. By the end of next year, you'll be making 3. So net after inflation, you made 1% in 2 years and have paid ordinary income on it and gotten no depreciation. Forget about multifamily. How is what you're doing rational?
Dude, Neil, I love that. I love that.
Right? And I have 9 more of these kinds of things, right? So, you know, here's another one. So this is important. And I'm giving this away, by the way. At RaiseFest, 300 people took a flyer from me. I printed them in color and bought it for people because it's like, I can't convince 2 million investors. I only have 10,000. So the only way to convince 2 million people is to give this away to everybody, right?
True.
And that helps me, obviously, because it increases the values of my billion-dollar portfolio. So thank you for taking this from me and saying it to your investors. Yeah. So here's the next one. I think this will really open your eyes because the what investors are saying is extraordinarily irrational. Okay, ready for the second one?
Let's do it.
All my friends are telling me that they've had cash calls and no cash flow for 2 years. Why should I invest? The answer is, and your friends are creating the opportunity for you to make money. Their investments were made when the market was at a peak and properties were highly overvalued. That wasn't a rational investment back then. As interest rates went up, values went down, their cash flow disappeared. And that's why properties today are between 20 and 30% cheaper. The naked truth, their loss is your gain.
Okay. My God, Neil, this is powerful, man. This is powerful.
Why can't investor relations managers who are professionals and do this 8 hours a day say something as simple as this? There's nothing more that needs to be said. Investors are not dumb. They are misguided. Investors are misguided. They're not dumb. I don't find any dumb investors that I talk with, but I find misguided investors all the time. Why are they misguided? Well, because of social media and because the media in general, whether it's social or not, has a bent. If you provide a negative article, you'll get 1 million views. If you provide a positive article, you won't even get 5% of that. So it is normal to provide only negative content. So it's very important that we do a combination of two things. Number one, provide real data from real sources. balanced, not one-sided, balanced to our investors again and again as that data comes out. Okay? And second, answer the irrational questions. So I have these 10 questions that anyone can have access to, by the way. I'm giving this away. There's no catch. There's no, I'm trying to sell in, if I don't have any educational packages. But even if I had it, I would basically say, why would I want to charge for something like this when it is to my interest?
It's going to help you. Yeah.
Help every equity raisers and syndicators out there. So I'm giving it away. I'll give you a link. People can go there and download this PDF. And please, for God's sakes, memorize it. It is a total of 2 pages. One page on the front, one page on the back. How hard is it to memorize the answer to 10 questions? Like this is critical, absolutely critical. And people are not doing it. You know why I know they're not doing it? Because I'm on the drip campaigns of dozens of these equity raisers. And even the best of them have made no attempt. They're beaten down.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I love that, Neil, because I think our audience is a mix. I think it is probably 80% passive or active investors and indicators. But what I love about this question is that I think everyone needs to read this I call it FAQ. These are FAQs, basically saying.
I want every investor to read it, right? Because it's questions, right? There are very simple, obvious answers. And you can disagree with me. You can say, no, these are one-sided answers. I don't think that you would know for sure until you actually read it.
Until you read it. Yeah, and I think part of that is with these questions is because you're hearing the media noise where you're hearing foreclosure notifications for hundreds of millions of dollars of properties. That is there. Yes, I'm not denying it. But is that a reflection on the entire industry?
No, it's not. Let me say this, the following words, right? So I try to be, one of the key parts of my brand is precision of speech, right? Mm-hmm. Accuracy and precision of speech. So I'm going to say a bunch of statements that I believe to be true. Number one, the multifamily industry is not in distress. There is no evidence that the industry is in distress. Number two, there are 3,000 multifamily properties in potential distress, of which roughly a quarter are already in distress, and the remaining 75% are going to go into distress this year. So 3,000 properties are in distress. Number three, those 3,000 properties are under 3% of the entire multifamily market. It is a $4 trillion market, which is now $3 trillion because prices have dropped by 25%. In that $3 trillion market, according to various sources, the total maximum amount of distress is $67 billion. That's 2.3% of the multifamily industry. So to say that the multifamily industry is in distress is a nonsensical statement. There are two different measures of distress, and distress is usually tied to delinquency, people not paying their mortgage on time. Overall, the multifamily industry's delinquency is at 0.4%. Credit cards are 2.5%. Single family homes are 2%. Overall delinquency is 1/5 of what we are generally seeing in the marketplace on auto loans, single family loans, home equity lines, and credit cards. So overall numbers are extraordinarily low. Now, there is a component of the industry that is higher. It is called CMBS. It's one kind of lender, CMBS. And a lot of these loans that were given out to syndicators in the last 3 years that were bridge loans were given out through an agency called CMBS. So we went and looked at CMBS loans. They are higher. They are not 0.4%. They're at 2% delinquency, 2%. Here's the point though. 2016, CMBS delinquency, 2%. 2017, 2%. 18, 2%. 19, 2%. 20, 2%. 2021, down to 1% because you couldn't foreclose on properties.
Right.
22, 2%. 23, 2%.
Wow. Right? That's CMBS. Neil, this is powerful data, man.
This is the data that anyone can get from me. It's actually on the homepage of multifamilyu.com. I stuck it there because it's brand new data. I put it together in the last few months and I said, there's delinquency. I'm not saying that what's happening is not bad. It is bad. $67 billion of assets are in distress. But here's the thing that people don't tell you. Fine, $67 billion of assets are in distress and they could go back to the bank. But should one assume that these properties are now worth $0?
No.
They're probably worth 25 to 30% less than they were 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
Okay. Let's give it a 40% discount. Like all of these properties, every single one of them, none of them escapes, you know, going back to the bank, worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. And all of them are worth 40% less. Absurd numbers, but I want to be absurd for a moment, right? So you take 67 million and then you basically take $26 billion out of it. That's 40%. And now you're basically left with about $41 billion of total distress in the multifamily space.
Right.
In a $3 trillion asset. Right. And I'm not saying that commercial real estate doesn't have issues. The same number that I gave you for CMBS, 2% for multifamily, it's 6% for malls and 6% for office. Six and six. These are all 2024 brand new numbers. So obviously there's distress in the mall space.
Right.
And there's distress in the office space. And that number is probably going to go up, and so is the multifamily number. My point is this. If you combine malls in the United States with office, that asset class is the same size as multifamily. And at 6%, they're already at 6, by the way. Malls were at 12 and they've come down a bit because, you know, people have started going to malls again after COVID. Has the world ended? How many banks have actually gone down in the last 6 months because of either malls or office or multifamily? The answer is zero.
Zero.
We had Silicon Valley Bank, but that was a run on a bank where every single client was a technology client, and they all removed their money within weeks, within hours, before the Fed could come in and basically distribute, you know, or give them a credit line. That was a $200 billion bank. The vast majority of the banks that have these tainted multifamily office loans, commercial loans, are smaller banks, $1 billion, $2 billion, $3 billion in assets, the vast majority.
Yeah.
When these banks go out of business, and they will over the next 18 to 24 months, many of these banks, I expect dozens, will go out of business. What every analyst in the industry is saying, these banks are far too small to create contagion in the banking space. Yeah. So the idea that somehow multifamily will or office will create contagion is a truly ridiculous one. No self-respecting analyst or nobody that's in the banking sector would ever say such a thing. But if you're the realdeal.com and you love creating clicks on your pages, I'm sure you'll say all kinds of nonsense. So the idea of contagion is completely nonsensical. The idea that multifamily is in distress is equally nonsensical. The idea that there are 3,000 properties in distress is accurate.
Dave, this is brilliant. Thank you for being precise and clear about that data, because that the data is where the power lies. So Neil, taking a step forward, so somebody was on the fence after listening to you, after what's happening, they're ready to take a forward step in at least opening themselves up for multifamily. The question again comes back to one thing, like, how do you believe who to invest alongside with? Right? Because the last 3, 4, 5 years have created this industry in a way that, again, time became the best medicine for a lot of people. The time healed everyone's mistake. It covered up everyone's mistakes. So how are you thinking of when somebody is trying to invest with as a passive investor with a syndicator? What has the criteria to evaluate a syndicator changed?
I think to some extent, but I'll start with the good news. Every syndicator today is better than they were 2 years ago. The industry is new. It was the syndicator industry basically started because of the 2013 Jobs Act. Yes, there were syndicators before that, but as an industry, it has only existed since the 2013 Jobs Act and had never seen a downturn. This downturn has been beneficial for all of us. We've learned new things. We've learned that some of the things that we said were just factually incorrect and we'd never say them again. And I think that as an industry, every syndicator today is in a better position to manage your money than before, including even the biggest ones. Okay. So that's the first piece of good news. You're in a much better position. Second, the vast majority, and this is actually the question to one of the key questions, right? What if inflation goes up again? That's one of my 10 questions, right? People are asking, what if inflation goes up again? Well, the vast majority of investments today that are being purchased are either fixed debt or assumable debt. Both of those are fixed, right? So if inflation goes up in the future, you would be a beneficiary. Yeah, as the mortgage would be fixed, but rents would spike with higher inflation, just as they have in the last 80 years. Go to the web, find any chart that tracks inflation together with rents. And you'll notice that as inflation goes up, rents go up, right? Now, it is not a direct relationship in the sense that if inflation goes up next month, rents will go up next month. It doesn't work like that. But if you look at it over years or over a three-year time frame, you'll see that there is a 100% correlation over a three-year time frame between rents going up and inflation going up. Over a 6-month time frame, it's correlated, but not highly correlated. So if you're making an investment for a 1-year time frame, maybe this is not a good idea for you. But if you're making an investment for three years or longer, then the fact that inflation raises rents is almost guaranteed to happen. And there's been no point in the last 80 years, including the 80s when we had high interest rates, that this hasn't been true, right? So bottom line is, why would you be afraid of a scenario where you invest into a property that has a some kind of fixed loan and inflation is going up? I mean, I would want inflation to go up if I invested in 10 properties with fixed debt.
Definitely.
It's a truly nonsensical statement, right? So bottom line is that I'm that's why I mentioned, you know, if you're an investor right now, inflation is your friend. It wasn't your friend 24 years ago. It was your enemy. Yeah. Today, if you're investing, the dollars that you invest today, inflation is your number one friend. Now, I'm not saying inflation is not going to come down. I'm in the camp of people that believe that inflation will come down to somewhere between 2 and 3%. Technically, at this point, it's below 3% for one measure and slightly above 3% for the other measure. So there's two ways of measuring inflation. And so if you average them out, you're at 3%. And I believe that it's not going to come down to 2, but it's going to stay between 2 and 3% for the next, you know, 5 or 10 years. There might be spikes. Who knows? Can't predict the future. The point is, it's going to come down to a more reasonable level. And rents typically tend to be a slightly over inflation. Once again, look at the 80-year charts and you notice that on average, rents are a little bit above inflation over a 3-year average time frame. So I don't think that people should be afraid of investing. I think that investing into bridge debt today is still very problematic. Getting bridge debt is problematic. And then, you know, sure, people can buy rate caps and things like that. If it was my money, let's say I had $100 million, I would buy properties using bridge debt and tight rate caps. And I wouldn't use a single dollar of fixed debt today. That's if it was my money. But I don't believe that today syndicators are doing that. And I understand that they want to be conservative, and I'm not opposed to that conservatism. But I think that what the syndicators are doing are lowering the potential returns from these properties by locking in fixed debt, but they're also lowering the risk, right? So you might make 12% IRR or 11% IRR. I think you've already taken plenty of risks as an investor in the last 2 years. Shouldn't you be now focusing on risk reduction?
Love it, Neil. I can talk to you forever, dude. This is amazing. This is amazing. That's why you call the mad scientist, because you have data behind everything. I love that.
Well, I think in today's world, being mad is actually the only way to be sane. That's my belief.
Now, that is powerful statement, man. Being mad is the only way to be sane, because it is very...
Because we live in a world that's mad.
Yeah.
Right? In a mad world, madness is sanity.
Yeah, because madness keeps you looking. I like that. I love that. Yes. Well, Neil, I want to be respectful of your time here. I think I also want to make this show too technical, because then it's going to go over people's head. So I want to manage the time we want to spend here. Any parting comments? I think it's the message that if I have to distill the message, is that keep an open eye towards investing, right? And don't be fearful of what you're listening to the news. Look at the data. And Neil has provided you resources, data, his website. He's going to give you the access to FAQs, which we'll upload in the show notes. Any parting comments that you have, Neil, which we haven't discussed so far, and you think is going to materially impact the investors in positive or negative?
I think first, make sure you download the top 10 irrational investor objections doc, and Suckhead will give you a link to that. Second, understand that I'm not predicting that this will be a great year for multifamily. I think it's going to be a muddle through year. Right. I'm also not predicting that multifamily will bottom this year. Prices have dropped between 20 and 25%, depending on who you listen to.
Yeah.
But it is my belief that they're nearing a bottom. The greatest investor of all time, Warren Buffett, said, "I was never able to time the bottom. So what I do is I buy in a smile. When prices get to a certain level where I'm convinced that they're underpriced, I start to buy. And I buy at one asset, then the next one, the next one, the next one, the next one, in a smile. And I know that if I buy 6 assets or 10 assets, some of those assets, maybe 1, 2, 3 of them, are at the bottom." And the bottom occurs sometimes in the next 12 months. I don't know when in the next 12 months it occurs. It occurs when a combination of two things happens. The Federal Reserve starts cutting interest rates, and I've cut enough of them to start putting a floor under the bottom. Remember, we're not talking about things going upwards. We're just talking about the bottom being hit. So there's, you know, three cuts, I think, are enough for there to be a floor where it's like, okay, this, and it might stay at that level for another 6 months or so because before it starts to move upwards, more cuts are necessary at that point. That is what is going to happen in the next year. And it is my strong belief that it is going to happen. And these 3,000 distressed properties are not going to make a difference to that. I feel sorry for the people who've lost money. My message to you is, if you lost money, you absolutely should invest today. Because if you believe in cycles, then you lost in a down cycle. You should gain that money back in an upcycle.
Upcycle. Neil, on that note, buddy, thank you again for being so insightful, sharing your insight, and also inspiring the investor. I think that conversation is needed. So thank you again for doing that. Neil, if somebody wants to learn about your work and maybe get on your list to learn about your projects and stuff, where can they find you?
I think the best place is sign up at multifamily followed by the letter U.com. That's multifamilyu.com. You'll see a dozen of our presentations, including the presentation we've been talking about today, which was recorded a few weeks ago. Join our community, listen to what we have to say, and at some point over the next 3, 6, 9 months, you know, you'll get exposed to our projects. Just don't be in a hurry.
Awesome. Well, Dave, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
If you got value from this episode, you might consider sharing this content with a friend. But most importantly, be sure to take action on what you've learned. One way you can take the next step is to connect directly with Saket on an investor call. That link is waiting for you in the show notes below.